Hello, everyone. This is Lucas Sipe-Williams, the Baltimore Health Coach, and I'm here with a good friend of mine, Angela Taylor. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Lucas.
Thank you for being on this call with me.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
So Angela is a phenomenal woman. She is a musician, a singer, and songwriter, and you can check that out at angelataylor.com. But she's also a mother to a how old is James now?
He's four.
James is four. And you've been on quite a ride with James, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Since he got diagnosed with autism at age two.
Yeah. So one of the things, Angela, you know that I love is to share stories of healing with people. And I think that many people who are listening to this will know that I got into nutrition and the health field because people in my family were sick. And the conventional approach to, I guess you could say, attempting to remedy the illness that one of my siblings had, it was very unsuccessful. You know, very low rates of success and very nasty side effects, the drugs and the surgeries. And so I started researching what was in our power, you know, what sort of things could my sibling do to support his body to heal. And I found all these amazing stories of healing just through diet and lifestyle modifications. And that's how I got into nutrition. And you and I, a couple of years back, we did a consultation. And I was just completely floored and inspired by your story and the story of James and all that you've been through and the really phenomenal healing that he's had through your persistence and dedication and the changes you all have made. So would you be willing to share with us what it's been like to other people who may have a child who's been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder?
Absolutely. So when James was diagnosed, we didn't really know what to do, but, you know, we tried to make appointments with, you know, doctors who specialized in this type of thing. And we were fortunate, at least, to get steered towards a DAN doctors, which means Defeat Autism Now. And our very first DAN doctor, you know, he insisted that we do the gluten-free, casein-free diet. So the first thing, he said, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to do this diet. And he handed us, you know, it's like 15 pieces of paper that were, you know, Xeroxed a zillion times and stapled together. And I was very daunted by that, I have to say, because even though I was already eating a very healthy diet, you know, we already were going to Whole Foods and buying organic foods and that, to do gluten-free seemed so daunting to me at that time. But, you know, luckily my husband was very supportive. When we left that appointment, we went straight to the grocery store. We bought a bunch of gluten-free stuff. We came home and threw away everything in our kitchen that had wheat in it. And, you know, we got started, and we were blessed that we started to see some good improvements in James. Some of his stimming behaviors that he used to do, such as flapping his hands or hitting his head on the ground, those went away on the gluten-free diet for us. But you know what? He still wasn't understanding us when we were talking to him. And my gosh, if your kid doesn't understand you, you know, how is he going to learn anything? So I started doing, you know, really desperation, a lot more research on the internet, and I found some other moms who had tried a diet called GAPS, which stands for Gut and Psychology Syndrome. And they were saying, yes, it's a lot more strict than this gluten-free diet, but you know what? This diet, it really works. And everybody had said how they started off gluten-free and they had had some success, but that this diet was the missing link they needed to heal their kids. Mm. So we just, after reading all the, you know, hints, advice, testimonials, it was suggested that you started during a sort of like a break time for your kid. So, you know, he was in preschool. So we decided to do it over the winter break. And, you know, if you don't know what this diet's about, I'll just try and briefly summarize it for you. Of course, yes, it is gluten-free, but it's also obviously food coloring-free, pesticide-free, sugar-free, and it's also entirely starch-free. So that meant that we weren't going to be eating corn or rice or potatoes anymore. So we had to really modify our way of looking at what we're going to eat, because we needed to get carbohydrates from somewhere since we couldn't get them from any grains or, you know, other starchy foods. So we started eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. And once we got used to it and once I developed some good recipes that we liked, it really wasn't that hard. It was a learning curve, an adjustment time. And so after I successfully did this with James, he's now, well, it took a while, but, you know, I'd say within about 1 to 2 months, he was totally understanding what we were saying to him, and then his speech started to normalize probably by about 3 or 4 or 5 months. His speech really started to come up in level because he used to be down in, like, the 6th percentile of speech.
Hmm.
And now, my gosh, I mean, he is totally a normal kid. If you didn't know that he had had an autism diagnosis, I mean, you would never suspect because he's in a normal school. He asks questions. He points at things. He has conversations with us. He comments on things constantly. I mean, now it's like he won't stop talking. He won't shut up. I mean, it's great, you know. So we're really blessed that we found this diet and that we were able to stick to it.
So what would have been the predictable future if you all had not made any dietary modifications? Do you think it would have been significantly different than the way he is now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can look at some other friends' children, and I see that they are, you know, they're still in special ed classes in their school. They're still stimming. You know, I'm thinking of one girl in particular who's just about to be a teenager, and my goodness, she does the strangest things when she's sitting around watching TV, and, you know, she's in a room with all her relatives or friends or whatever, and people don't want to play with her, you know,
yeah.
And it's really sad. And, you know, I wish that the whole world could know that something as simple as changing the diet could have such a profound impact on your child's life and on your family's life.
Yeah.
And I also know people who find it really difficult to potty train their children, and their children are getting older and older and still having great difficulty with potty training. Luckily for us, James, you know, after we started the diet, we were able to potty train him, you know, pretty quickly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly couldn't have done it before. So, yeah, it's made a huge difference for us.
And would you be able to shed any light on a little bit on the science of why the GAPS diet? Why would we cut out the complex carbohydrate, the starches?
I know. That does seem sort of weird, doesn't it? Because
mm-hmm.
In America, that's where we're sort of accustomed to getting a lot of our calories from. But it turns out that that kids on the autism spectrum, and that would be all kids who sort of fall into that classification, autism, Asperger's, and even ADD and ADHD. I was surprised to learn that all of that stuff is on the autism spectrum. But anyway, if you look at their guts, if you were to literally do a biopsy of their gut, you would find that they have what's called leaky gut, where there's literally little holes in their guts. And this, you know, there's a couple theories on why this is. Candida overgrowth, vaccine contribution, which is damage to the gut, which then leads to the candida overgrowth. You know, nobody's 100% sure. I think that it's going to be a long time till we see any conclusive research studies to say what's the cause of it, because of the way that money and medicine are interrelated in government in this country. But I believe that that's sort of all related. So anyway, we got leaky gut to deal with. So
mm-hmm.
what that means is when you eat certain foods that have certain chemical and atomic molecular structures, they get out into the bloodstream before they've been fully digested through the little
mm-hmm.
perforations in the gut. And so when starches and also when certain forms of dairy
mm-hmm.
are eaten and they leak out of the gut before they've been properly digested, they have opiate-type qualities in the brain. And that
mm-hmm.
is why when your kid eats certain foods, they get kind of wackadoo, and it's also why they kind of end up being addicted to those foods.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, I would think that my kid was, like, addicted to, like, waffles, french fries, you know, stuff like that. That's what he was always gravitating towards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, the basic science. So wheat, obviously, is a really big problem for these kids because the gluten and the structure of the wheat causes a lot of opiate-type qualities in the brain. But some researchers who came long before me, who sort of figured this all out, Elaine Gottschall and Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride, they figured out, hey, guess what? If wheat is a problem, you know what? all the other starches, they have the same similar molecular structure. Those are a problem too.
Yeah. Yeah, really smart, really smart. And so just so everybody knows that all this information can be found on Angela's website, brainfoodcookbook.com. So that's brainfoodcookbook.com. And the specific carbohydrate diet, the GAPS diet, which you were saying is largely based on the specific carbohydrate diet you mentioned, Dr. Elaine Gottschall. I came across this diet at the very beginning when I was researching protocols, healing protocols for Crohn's and colitis, which is what my sibling has been dealing with. And this is a whole different disorder, but possibly with the same exact origins, which is the leaky gut.
Right.
And many, many people with Crohn's and colitis end up with complete remission, freedom from drugs and surgeries, simply through this particular dietary modification. Now, I say simply, but it's not necessarily a simple thing to do, right?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's a little daunting because you don't know how to cook this way, and you don't know how to make food that your kid's going to eat. And so I read through the books which explained the science, which Elaine Gottschall's book is called Breaking the Vicious Cycle, and then Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride's book is called GAPS, Gut Psychology Syndrome. But honestly, I wasn't having a whole lot of success with the recipes in there. They were legal. They followed the diet, but I couldn't get my kid to eat them. So I had to really start doing a lot more research and a lot more tinkering in the kitchen and getting really inventive. And so I ended up sort of assembling a notebook full of recipes that I made on my own. And eventually, after I had so much success with James, and now I'm spending so much less time, you know, autism used to be my full-time job, but now autism is not my full-time job anymore because James can go to school now, and James
wow.
doesn't have to do hours and hours of ABA therapy anymore, and he doesn't have to do any speech therapy anymore. So now I've got these wonderful recipes sitting on the shelf. I thought it would be a great opportunity for me to make them available to other people. So I am in the process of publishing this cookbook because I know it's hard to do, and especially, you know, for moms who really don't have any sort of cooking background at all, it's doubly daunting because not only do they not have access to good recipes, but they don't really know how to, they don't spend much time cooking anyway. So they've got a double learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
So my book aims to address really both of those.
That's phenomenal. What a contribution. And from the very beginning, I think I may have shed a few tears in our consultation, just so inspired by your love and dedication for your son, and just that your persistence and your stick-to-itiveness and your commitment and all the hard work you've put in. And I know it hasn't been easy, and now to have all of that not only benefit your son, but now it's going to carry over and ripple out into the world in a really big way. It's really phenomenal. Whether we have a child with autism or not, cooking real food that will support the body to be energized and healthy and for us to live a long life is not easy for anybody. So it's certainly a process, and if we're going to eat it, it has to be delicious, you know. And,
yeah.
and through practice and through support, we can learn how to make things that we actually enjoy, and then begin, even though we know that cooking real food, preparing real food, it takes time, we can get into a rhythm with it. Have you found that you've, through practice and over the years, you've now become more time efficient?
Yeah, and you know, there's some things that I've definitely sort of fallen into in my rhythm. One of the most important things to do is I have a calendar, and on the calendar I write what we're going to have to eat every day, so that we're not eating, you know, beef four nights in a row or whatever. But also it helps me with my shopping, because I pretty much do all my shopping at an organic grocery store. And, you know, I don't want to have to be running over there every day for some little thing that I need, because I can't really go to the regular grocery store a lot of times to get the things that I need. So that's really helpful in getting me organized for my shopping, so that saves time. And also it saves me brain power not having to think about what I'm going to make for dinner that night, or, you know, remembering to thaw whatever I need to thaw, you know. Another thing that has helped is that we sort of developed a system where we always eat a raw vegetable first, because, like I said, all your carbohydrates, all your calories are coming from fruits and vegetables, so you need to make sure that your kid gets those. and you know, the protein, the meat part, is always really tasty to them, but you can't just have them eating, you know, 70% protein, because that'll be hard on their kidneys. So I set up sort of a system where it's like, first you have to eat all your raw vegetable, and after you eat that, then we move to the you know, the meat and the cooked vegetable course, and I'll typically alternate bites, so I keep the food out of his reach. We have this sort of chair that the tray kind of clicks into place, so he has to stay in his chair for the whole meal. Can't be running around. So I will dole out, okay, first green beans, then hamburger. And so now that he's familiar with the system, he knows that he has to eat one entire green bean before he can have one bite of hamburger. So that's how I get a lot of vegetables into him that way. And then he knows that after he's finished, you know, phase one and phase two, or course one and course two of the meal, then he gets the fruit course, which of course is his favorite. And so this all works out really well for us in terms of getting the healthy food into him with a minimum of fuss and fighting, because he's got, you know, things to look forward to. He's got, and sometimes I'll even set the fruit right there on the table, you know, way out of his reach, and say, okay, well, do you want the fruit? Yes. Okay, well, first green beans, eat all of them, then you can have your fruit. And he understands that very well.
Yeah.
And I guess a third thing that I do is that I will, you know, wash all the dishes right away while all the food is still, you know, fresh on there, so it doesn't get caked on. And I have, you know, dish racks, you know, in my kitchen, so that I just let everything air dry and I go to bed. I don't waste time drying things. Time is too precious. I'm already spending enough time in the kitchen. So in the morning when I get up, I just put everything away that's dried overnight, and that saves me a lot of time not to dry. So there's some tips.
Yeah, that's great. And I think with any child, having a consistent approach and a rhythm with food and everything, it's helpful for children to know what to expect. And so I imagine that while you're feeding this to James, you're eating whatever you want, right? You're eating potatoes and Twinkies and things like that.
No, no. We threw all the illegal food out of the house. When we switched to GAPS, we had to get really even stricter than gluten-free, casein-free, and I just took all the food that we weren't allowed to eat anymore, and I put it in grocery bags, and I gave it to my friends.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's another thing, too, is like kids, it's really helpful for children if we model what we want them to do. You know, and so that's great that you're taking that commitment with him. So if leaky gut was maybe the biggest contributing factor to the behaviors, and it's all about supporting the body to heal the leaky gut, we see that it's not the food that necessarily goes in and patches it up. It's the body itself that's healing that intestinal lining. Is that correct?
Yes, and, you know, it's beyond the scope of this brief introductory call here to really go into the science of how the body heals itself. But I would highly recommend that everyone, in addition to reading, you know, my cookbook, that they read the books that came before my cookbook, which is where I learned all the science. And again, that's Elaine Gottschall's book, Breaking the Vicious Cycle, and Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride's book, Gut Psychology Syndrome, because they discuss the importance of things like, well, especially Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride discusses the importance of probiotics, probiotic foods, chicken broth as being a very healing thing. You know, it's sort of a double process. It's like you're not eating the foods that continue to damage the gut, but you're also going to be consuming stuff that's actually going to help to heal the gut.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's putting good stuff in the body, giving the body the fuel and the building blocks to repair itself, and removing all the blockages, the obstacles, the irritants that prevent the body from healing itself.
Yeah.
And this is universal stuff. This is no matter what a symptom a person might be experiencing, whether it's their child with autism, or whether it's someone who has Crohn's or colitis, or whether somebody has, you know, persistent yeast infections or whatever it may be. It's the same principles and the same fundamental underlying imbalance, like leaky gut, can actually contribute to. It can play itself out in different people in different ways. So when I talk to the holistic doctors who I trust, they'll tell me that leaky gut is at the bottom of a lot of different common ailments and chronic disorders and diseases.
Yeah, a couple other ailments that Natasha Campbell McBride lists right on the front of her book, in addition to what we've been talking about, is dyslexia can be helped by this, and depression and bipolar disorder. All these things also, like you're saying, it's at the root of a lot of stuff.
Cool. So this has really been informative for me, again, to learn a little bit more, and obviously very inspiring. And we'll be posting this on the website, and I really do encourage everybody, no matter whether you have a child who's autistic or showing those signs or know someone who does, or if you're just inspired by healing, it's a phenomenal website and really important to understand. And again, it teaches us universal principles of healing. And Angela, I want to thank you again for taking this time as well as sharing this incredible gift with the world.
Thanks, Lucas. It's my pleasure.
Cool. Is there anything you'd like to share to the listeners before we go?
Yeah, I just have one last tip for them.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to do this, I applaud you, and I urge you to not cheat, because if you do cheat, it kind of undoes all your hard work. There's enough gluten in a crouton to like mess my kid up for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I really urge you, if you're going to do it, you know, really try to do it right.
Yeah, yeah. And that really leads me to say that whenever we make any food changes, especially when it comes to restriction, it's important for us to understand how we use food. And we use food for entertainment and for comfort and for pleasure and all these things. So if we're going to take on a restrictive approach to food, whether it's to heal something or whether it's simply just to have as much energy and best health possible, it really does require a holistic approach where we examine, we make sure that we really are getting pleasure and entertainment and comfort and enjoyment and all of this from non-edible sources. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we actually had to sit down and make a list of things that we could do as a family that did not involve going out to eat, because we really don't go out to eat anymore. I mean, it saved us a lot of money because we don't go out to eat anymore, so it's given us, you know, I guess the money that we needed to continue to buy these organic healthy foods, you know, came out of one part of the budget and went into another. But it meant that we had to really sort of sit down and think about things that we could do. We could go to the movies, we could go bowling, we could go to festivals, we could go to the playground. So we just started to rethink the types of things that we would do for fun. Because, yeah, you still need to go do things for fun. And I know that it's a big part of being human is going out to eat with your friends is what a lot of people do for entertainment. So you do have to rethink that a little bit. Or you know what else? I'll throw dinner parties and have people come here.
Yeah.
And if they ask, what can I bring? I'll say, you know what, bring a salad. And then I'll just make the rest. Oh, and you know, one other thing I could suggest is that, you know, it's really hard to buy you can't really buy so much prepared or prepackaged food, and sometimes you're out and about running errands, and then, uh-oh, we're hungry. What are we going to eat? And you know what I'll do in those situations is I'll just run in someplace and get some fruit, because fruit's always legal. I mean, you don't want to eat a ton of fruit because it's just too high in sugar, but, hey, if you're in a bind, you don't want to break the diet by eating something illegal, so just run in somewhere and get some fruit.
Yeah, that's really a good tip. Really useful stuff. And this last point, not the fruit one, but the one before that about creating a list of all of the wonderful things you all can do as a family that don't involve eating starchy foods. For me, that's where I see the most successful people, the people who really have transformative healing. They will often say in hindsight, wow, that, you know, I don't really wish, for instance, autism on anybody, but a lot of good has come from that. You know, a lot of good comes from the trials and tribulations that we experience. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you again, Angela, and everybody out there, if you're dealing with a situation like Angela's, we hope that you have been inspired, that you have hope, and that you take courageous action. And one of those actions could be, first step is visiting Angela's website, brainfoodcookbook.com. So we will talk to you all again soon.